Did you know that the best place to view the project is through the website theythemproject.org? It's the only place you can see all the photos, videos, and podcast interviews, and easily share the project to help it be seen and make a difference. In addition to the website, They Them Project is everywhere. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or Google Play. Remember, the project grows and informs only when it is shared by people like you. Go to theythemproject.org and share what you see and hear. Hello, my name is Brent Dundor. I'm a full-time photographer, activist, and ally, and the proud producer of the They Them Project. They Them Project interviews non-binary individuals, offering a platform for them to be seen and heard while informing and educating everyone on how words and actions affect the trans plus community.
Hi, I'm Vaughn. I'm the creator of Trans Sex Scene, and I use they and them pronouns.
Thank you for being here, Vaughn, and thank you for sharing your pronouns with me. I use he and his pronouns. Would there ever be a time that you would be upset if someone asked you what pronouns you use?
No, I don't think so. There's times where, depending on the context, I feel like people ask my pronouns because I'm visibly gender nonconforming in some way, rather than it being a space where everyone is asking each other's pronouns. And that doesn't bother me. I'm just very aware of that.
Is they, them pronouns the only pronouns you accept or use?
They're the only pronouns I use. I frequently get called other pronouns, and I guess I don't really expect different than that. Depending where I am all the time, like, every other person might call me something different.
So in any given situation, you would prefer they, them pronouns, and those are the pronouns I should use for you today.
Yeah, thanks.
Right. How long have you been using they, them pronouns?
I think I started using they, them pronouns maybe like 6 or 7 years ago.
6 or 7 years seems like, through the project, it actually seems like a long time to be using they, them pronouns. So I'm curious about that.
Sure. When I first came out as trans, I didn't really understand that there was like more trans identities than just F to M and M to F. And so I started using he and him. And then I think when I moved to Minneapolis, I started to meet more of a broad range of people in terms of how they presented and the pronouns they were asking for. And I had known about those pronouns, but I hadn't ever thought to ask for them for myself. And it was a big transition, especially with my family. They still don't really use they, them pronouns for me. I think because of the argument about grammar and whatever. But in most spaces, I feel like pretty comfortable advocating to use they, them. It's interesting because when I first came out as trans, the other trans people I were meeting were using they, them, but presenting in a really particular masculine way. I think a lot of the times I've kind of defined my identity more by what I'm not than what I am. And I knew I didn't mesh with or like connect with this way that these other non-binary trans people were presenting themselves. And so at that time chose to use he, him. I don't think it's until I started to meet people who were more like feminine presenting and trans who are using they, them that I started to feel like, oh, I can see how there's like a whole broad range of people who are going to use this kind of pronoun.
How much responsibility do you think should be put on others to ask your pronouns or for you to tell others what pronouns you use?
I think it really depends on the context, and I have really different standards for this for myself personally than I maybe would expect someone else using they and them to use. But for myself personally, I don't really feel like a universal responsibility of everyone I meet to ask my pronouns, get my pronouns right, not assume a gendered pronoun for me. And that's just my own like personal standards, I think, because really it doesn't feel like any pronouns are really right for me. But in a context of like a small queer scene here where I do feel like that's kind of now the standard, I find myself more like bristling more when I'm in spaces where I would hope or assume that people would ask my pronouns first. Yeah, especially when it's like a queer trans space.
You stated that you don't feel that you connect with any pronouns. So how much do you connect with they, them pronouns? And are there any other pronouns you've thought about using because of that statement?
I've never really thought about using other pronouns besides they, them. And I do feel like I connect more with they, them than she or he. I think that for myself, using other pronouns, I notice myself trying to make my presentation and my identity more like palatable or easy for other people, which is why a lot of the times I don't correct people who are misgendering me or mispronouncing me. My presentation is adaptable enough that I feel like I can kind of just try and let that like roll off of me. It was hard enough to use they, them. I think using a word that's not like part of the English language would be really challenging for me just in terms of the self-advocacy I would need to have.
I want to touch on that a little bit more. So Xochi was the last person that I interviewed and they used ni-nem pronouns. So just to be more specific for people listening who I want them to understand that there are many pronouns that people prefer and there's reasons they prefer them.
And I have so much respect for people who do choose to use like zim or ni-nim or just their name. And I feel really comfortable like following that for other people. It's a weird double standard I have of like not feeling like I could ask for that for myself, but really admiring and appreciating that other people do that. I think it's my own stuff around like not wanting to take up a lot of space with my transness, which is how I've been brought up as coming out as a pretty young trans person, being like 17, 18, and really like getting a clear message. And as a young queer person too, to like, I feel like I'm simultaneously battling with not wanting to take up a lot of space and wanting to be like as big and vibrant as I want to be. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have worked through another project with someone who does use Z, Zim pronouns, but I actually wasn't interviewing them. So Xochi was the very first person who I was asked to use different pronouns for. This is me being completely honest as I'm trying to do with this project. Like, I was like, well, it's so much easier for me to use they, them pronouns. That was so hard for me a year ago. Now I'm comfortable using they, them pronouns. You say that you accept they, them pronouns. Can I use they, them pronouns? Right, right. But I ultimately, and this is just from my perspective of the project, I mean, it all comes back to how much do you want to respect somebody? Mm-hmm. How much respect can you give them by asking the pronouns and using their pronouns?
Yep.
Your name. Have you always gone by Vaughn?
I just started going by Vaughn in the last 2 months. When I first came out, I changed my name to James, without even really thinking much about it. It felt like this really immediate, of course, because it's a name I had called myself when I was younger. And when I would write in my diary or write like my short fiction when I was 8, 9, and 10, it was like my pen name. But I've always felt like I wished I had a more neutral sounding name. And I'm surprised by how hard it's been to, like, it's harder than it was when I was 18 to now ask again. And I think it comes back to what I was touching on earlier of just like really needing to advocate for yourself and push people in your life to try something new. But I've been really happy with like the people who are close to me. I tried probably like 5 or 6 names before Vaughn and would just say, here's like 5 names. Will you rotate calling me these things so I can practice hearing what they sound like? And that was so like sweet and helpful of the people in my life to do that with me.
Yeah. Just to be transparent through the interview, I've been using a different name. I've been using James. So you're comfortable with me talking about James from the past?
Totally. Okay. I still find myself like I've been will meet new people and still say James. It's just so, it feels so natural that I have to like remember that I'm trying to change it. And I haven't told anyone at work yet or my family. I feel like I'm still kind of trying it on.
Well, in this interview, it's a great chance, experience for me, because I have been using James for you. Mm-hmm. But now you're asking for what you're using, a different name. And so I think that you being here today and using that name is a great part of the project for people to understand how things do change for people. Mm-hmm. So can you touch on any bit more of why? So you said Vaughn, and you said why you knew you wanted to use that name. Mm-hmm. Just to go a little deeper, so why doesn't James work?
It works and it doesn't work. I think I'll always have a lot of fondness for that name. And I think there's people in my life who will always feel good about them calling me that, because it was this special thing when I was younger. It's the name I've used for the last 10 years. But because it's so associated with like a masculine name, one of the biggest reasons actually, or like catalysts for changing it, having always been just a little uncomfortable, is that almost on a daily basis, if I'm on the phone, someone always thinks I'm saying Jane, even if I like spell out my name or like really slowly enunciate my name. And I've run into so many like bureaucratic problems now because of that. My son's doctor's office issued me like a formal statement being like, unless you can show a proof that you've changed your name from Jane to James or James to Jane, we can't provide services for him anymore. Because they didn't have like the correct records for me or something, but my name has never been Jane. None of my documents say Jane. So it was like enough circumstances like that where it was just so frustrating to come up against that all the time. Now I just say to people, like, you know, especially with records and things like that, they can almost never find me because they hear a somewhat feminine sounding voice and just assume that I'm saying a woman's name.
You explained the situation with your son, and I was looking for the best place to start that conversation. Yeah. I want you to just introduce all of that.
Yeah. So I have a 2-year-old whose name is Salem. We call him Sal. And I was pregnant and gave birth to him. And that was a really interesting experience as someone who doesn't really ever pass as a gender anywhere in the world. And I think compared to people I know who pass mostly as men who have become pregnant, I was able to kind of like, depending on my circumstances, change my presentation or my like dress in some way that maybe made being pregnant more palatable to the world around me. But the biggest issue for me was finding good health care while I was pregnant. And then now that I have a kid, getting good care for him that is like with providers who are competent and don't make assumptions about us as a family. And that's really been like a long process already in the last 2 years.
Something that I question and I would never ask unless I was in this situation where I can. And so you said that your child, you used he, him pronouns for your child. Mm-hmm. When did you decide that that's appropriate?
Yeah, we talked about this a lot. And it's interesting. My family had a lot of paranoia about like two trans people having a kid. And would we raise our kid as some sort of like social experiment where we didn't gender them at all? And it's funny the amount of like fear they had around that. We decided for the time being, while I was pregnant, we did decide to know like his sex and have his sex like assigned, because we wanted to know kind of either way what we were in store for, like just because of the intense gender socialization that starts as soon as a baby's born, even before that. And it's alarming, like everything from clothes to how people start to assign these like personalities and characteristics to them. And so we use he, him for Sal, but he knows so many people in his life who use such a broad range of pronouns. We don't really dress him in any particularly gendered way. We don't really make a point to assign like random things or like toy is a gender. And I think it'll just be an ongoing conversation with him as he grows up. And that's what I'm like really looking forward to in terms of raising a kid, to be more aware in that way. And whether or not, like, regardless of what pronouns we use, he'll be affected by masculinity and sexism and patriarchy in the same way anybody is. So we want him to really like be raised with a lot of consciousness around that.
Has there ever been a time that he has questioned himself?
He doesn't really talk a lot yet.
Oh yeah, he's two, right?
Yep. Yep. Right. In a really fun, like toddler way, he's super curious about like his genitals and my genitals. And so we talk more about like bodies and body parts than we do about people's identities and pronouns. But having worked with kids too for a long time, I think baseline having the conversation of like, why do you think that person is a boy or a girl? Or I so frequently get asked by young, like curious kids if I'm a boy or a girl. And to just, I would encourage anyone to make that a conversation and be like, well, what do you think? Or like, why do you think that? And the reasons young people come up with are so interesting and varied and really highlight the ways that like, the way we present ourselves has nothing to do with our like internal genders or our sex assigned at birth. And I really hope to promote for him like a environment where he can feel comfortable like changing his name, changing his pronouns. I love like young exploratory kids who have a new name every week and want to just be a princess full time. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops for him.
I like asking those questions to kids as well. My husband and I, we're very close to our nieces and nephews. They think that JP is my brother.
Yeah.
But to say, well, why do you think that? We've told you that he's my husband. And yeah. I think that it's so good to ask those questions to kids just to get them to think and be comfortable asking questions to understand people. And ultimately, that's what I want this project to do, is to get people to understand that in the right context, it's appropriate. It's what people prefer, for you to ask what they prefer. Can you give me an example of a time when someone challenged your gender and how that made you feel?
I think that's come up a lot with my family. Especially like that word challenge, that's what it makes me think of, is someone who really feels like in order to like be able to respect me, they need to understand, not just understand, but like be proven something about my internal identity versus, you know, I think a lot of people who try to explain more complex gender to their families get a lot of like, I don't understand, but I can accept it. And I think it's interesting because then I have to really look for myself and decide like, one, am I going to respond to this when I know I don't need to defend myself or justify my gender to other people? But also like, I would imagine anyone being asked to define or prove why their X, Y, and Z thing would struggle with that. Some of it to me isn't something with words, and similar to what I said earlier, in some ways, like I know what I'm not, but that doesn't mean I have a word for what I am. Like I know I'm not a cisgender woman or a cisgender man. And with where I'm at now in my identity and transition and my body, like I really don't feel like I fit in either of those things, but I don't have a word that I consistently use to say what I am. And I really resent being like asked to defend myself or justify myself.
Can you give an example of a time when someone validated your gender and how it made you feel?
I think there's a lot of people in my life who validate my gender, which I feel really fortunate about. I can think of when I first started to feel more comfortable expressing myself in a way that was a little more like feminine and still trans, or just not like typical to any one gender presentation. There was a lot of times where people assumed because I was like on hormones at that point, but also presenting really femininely, that I was a trans woman. And I had mixed feelings about that, but in some ways it did feel validating that my gender was just so in flux. And I appreciated that people could see that. And as annoying as it is to be misgendered, the times when people trip themselves up and say like, he, she, like, don't know what to call me, I know at least I'm really being seen in that moment for not being a binary gender, even though it's like uncomfortable. And I feel pretty like fine with that when it happens. I also am lucky to have like a partner and close friends who really, I feel like, see me and support me and encourage me to express myself.
Did you state that your partner is also trans?
Mm-hmm.
So would you want to touch on that at all? The idea of being in a relationship with another trans individual, if there's anything different with having a kid in that regard?
Yeah. So my partner is also identifies as trans and in some way like gender nonconforming or genderqueer and uses they and them pronouns. But in their life, most of the time passes as a man. And so it's interesting. I find for myself in any scenario, if the person I'm with is more easily identifiable as like a gender, it can almost be more confusing for other people to place me, like my partner on their own definitely looks gender ambiguous in some ways, but when the two of us together, I think it makes it that much more confusing. And so with a kid, it's interesting. People wanna immediately put a parent name to you, you know, and try and figure out how you fit. And we see that a lot when we're just like in a doctor's office or, you know, the nurse who comes in for 5 minutes. They always need to take down like, okay, who's with the kid today? And so it really varies of like, a lot of the times people make this assumption that we adopted him because they're assuming that we're both male. So we get a lot of like, so do you know anything about his family history? Which is just, it's interesting. It's wow. Like an interesting thing to navigate to be like, do we out that I'm the one who like gave birth to him? Sometimes we just kind of like move through it in this awkward way. Where we're like, yes, we know X, Y, or Z thing that you're asking. And then other times, I just like have to deal with this because it will keep happening, that, you know, providers speak to us and I'm always like mama or mommy, which I really don't like. That'll get really interesting as he gets older and he's like, who are you talking about? Like, he doesn't have a mom. The parent name I use for myself is Baba, and I might, at some point when he's older, maybe he doesn't want to call me Baba anymore, but he definitely knows that I'm not his mom, and will he correct people? Will I correct people? So that's been really interesting, and we've had some really, like, hard moments of that, depending on what care system we're in.
All right, so you introduced yourself, and you also said that you're the creator of Transsexine. Tell me all about Transsexine.
So Transsexine is a collaborative sex ed project for queer and trans youth and for people of all ages. And right now I work on a team with two other people taking submissions and editing the zine. We're actually about to put out our second edition. And this started from a personal project I had of writing sex ed content aimed at being like competent and inclusive around gender, not gendering body parts, talking a lot more about more than just like birth control, STIs, like that kind of information, and really having more of a personal narrative be part of that, which is kind of taboo in sex ed. Generally, sex educators stay away from talking about their personal experience, and I wanted to create a platform for trans people to kind of do part personal narrative, like how did they come to understand this thing about themselves or their sexuality? How does that play out in their life now? What are like their memories of being young people and exploring sex and sexuality? And then actual like how to do X, Y, and Z thing. And in my job, we did some focus grouping with trans youth about their sex ed content. And across the board, young people just want to know how to have sex. Like, they're getting information about condoms, but they don't actually know, like, how to have sex that feels good for them, validating for them, especially for young trans people.
I do want to mention that I've actually worked through the project with the two other people from Trans Sex Scene.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about them at all?
So Bobby and Chandler are the, I guess we haven't come up with the title of what we are, but we're collaborators. And they both had contributed actually to the first edition of the zine, and through the process of editing, just kind of really got on board for more of the organizational work. And so it's actually really helpful, and it's something I hope to grow, is like the more trans people who can give feedback. And that's why I kind of moved away from this project that was me writing my own experiences and narrative to wanting like a really broad audience to kind of give feedback and contribute. And so we make a point to really ask for people with like a broad range of experiences and identities to write for the zine. And it's helpful to have people to like bounce ideas off of. And as it's grown, there's just a lot more work to do. We are all over the country now in different sex toy stores and like sex education centers, trans clinics, and we're really looking to grow that further.
When did it all start? Did you say that? I don't think so.
So it started, my final project in college was a series of zines that were like individual sex ed topics. And then I think I started putting out calls for submissions for those zines to get broader stories, and was getting a lot of content from people who were cisgender identified or like not queer identified, and wanted to really, I think specifically around birth control, I really wanted to hear from trans people who were using some form of contraceptive, whether it was to prevent pregnancy or for other like hormonal things. And I think that's kind of how the first call for submissions started. And then I had a planning meeting. I just put a call out on the internet asking people to come give feedback and kind of think about format and values and whose voices we wanted to center. And from there, Bobby and Chandler both came to that and really stuck it out through that process. And so, yeah, the range of topics in the zine is really, really varied. And I'm really happy with what people just organically want to write about.
Through the conversation I had with Chandler, I mean, the simple question to counteract all of this is to say, well, why can't people just search something on the internet to learn?
Right. And through, again, these focus groups that we did with young trans people about also like where they're accessing their sex ed and how, so much of it is from pornography. And there's pros and cons to that, depending on the kind of porn that they're finding. But especially for young trans people, a lot of the representation they're seeing of themselves in porn is really like harmful imagery. And I think that how-to and personal narrative are really important to bring together, is to see like trans people being really honest about their bodies and what they like and don't like and how they communicate that to other people. It's not something you really find on the internet. You might like go down a deep Tumblr hole and find like a post versus kind of a curation of lots of different people's voices and stories. And we're still like, there's still a lot of room for growth there.
I want you to think of like an example where Trans Sex Scene is going to help somebody so that people can fully understand what that is like and how that needs to be, why that needs to be there.
I mean, I feel for myself like it's helped me just to get the submissions that people are putting in so far. So much of it is stuff that I either like really relate to and had never heard someone articulate quite like that before, and also stuff that I had never heard of before. I always enjoy like learning new things about sex and I just think the ways that people's sexuality is so varied is just endlessly like exciting and cool. And I do think that, you know, we get a lot of feedback from people in various ways about how important the zine is. I would like to work to make it even more relevant to like a younger audience, because right now it might skew like slightly older high school age. And we're lucky that we have networked with people who can help us create some of that content. The one thing that I've noticed is that while it has been helpful, a lot of people have come to us saying, like, this is really great to have this resource around sex, but still really needing resources that are just like a trans 101. We've had a lot of young people be like, could you create something that we could give like to our teachers or to our parents to help understand this thing? Which is interesting because we're very much like, we just write about sex. And so that's another side project that I'm working on right now, is that I've actually put a call out to people who identify as cisgender and allies to help do kind of the work of like, there's already a ton of resources like that to help kind of curate the best like trans 101 and to write from their perspectives about why it matters to them to respect and support trans people in their lives.
So is trans sexing only for trans people?
I don't think it is only for trans people. I feel really good about marketing it that way, especially being able to say like, this is by us and for us, because there's not a lot of content like that. But I think the actual material of trans sexing would be relevant to anyone who wants to explore their sexuality or their gender. And I think there's plenty of cisgender people who fit in that. And for people who just want to learn more about sex, communication, having a healthy self-concept, like that information is relevant to any person. It's not a specifically trans need.
People appreciate different things sexually. And just like gender, there's a very broad spectrum of what can exist in that world as well. And I, to be honest, I never even thought about that with trans sexing, but it totally makes sense.
It's just trying to take away the like really rigid gendering that happens in most sex ed. Like there, really anywhere you look, there's going to be a like four men or four boys and a four women and four girls. If you can think about like when you were 12, 13, you got split up, you know, in your classes. And the boys got one thing and the girls got another. Why shouldn't we know about each other's bodies and what's happening in puberty for each other and that sort of thing?
Do you think that there will come a time when that is the norm?
I think that's already starting to happen in some spaces. I do see the value in creating like what feels like a private or safe space. But I hope that young people at younger and younger ages are allowed to kind of shed some of this discomfort we put on like sex and bodies and the shame that gets placed with that so young. Because then we wouldn't need to be separate. It wouldn't need to be like learning this is so uncomfortable or so hard. And I think kids are genuinely curious at a really young age. And that's like, unfortunately, something that gets really cut off for a lot of young people.
I have seen trans sexing online, and I've also really appreciated the art that exists through it. So can you touch on that?
Yeah, I'm actually really excited because the second edition of trans sexing has way more graphic art and comics. And that's something we've always encouraged people to do, is to try and illustrate what they're talking about in some way, even if they're not someone who thinks of themselves as an artist. And I think there's something really cool about seeing people's processes explained through some sort of graphic. We got a lot of comic art this time around, and a lot of people just like creating powerful standalone images. Got some photo submissions, and that's something that we would really like to do moving forward, is to make the project more multimedia. So we've actually been conducting interviews with people as well. Like video interviews, and then also we'll have some audio to kind of take a script of questions and show like the differences and similarities between multiple people's stories.
Where do people find trans sexing?
You can find us online. It is available for digital download, but we also are stocked in a lot of stores across the country, and also like youth centers and trans advocacy groups and things like that. And all of that information is online. It felt important to keep it in a paper format. I have a lot of love and appreciation for zines and any sort of like self-published work. And I think it's really hard for trans folks to get themselves and their stories like in print and published. And so I still have a lot of appreciation for that, even though in reality, like, I do think the best way for us to reach our audience is online. And we purposefully formatted it like super simple, super bare bones, so that it would be really easy for people to just download and print it for themselves or read it on their phone. We have it available for a sliding scale starting at $0 for the online download, but also having it in stores is what allows us to keep producing it.
I'm sure there's instances where, if someone is going to the places that those exist, they to have, be able to walk away with something is how you're going to reach them.
Yeah, and there's people, we've gotten some great emails from people who like came into a space and saw it and were just so excited that it existed. And they wouldn't have heard about it otherwise. So we're really trying to broaden, because on the internet, you're reaching like a really particular audience. We're really trying to broaden it to get to like people of all ages, people of all backgrounds, and are super open to feedback on like where else besides like clinics, boutique sex toy stores, and like trans youth centers.
All right. So what is the website?
It's www.transsexscene.com. That's where you can find the download and also all of our call for submissions.
What advice would you give to your younger self or to youth who might be questioning their gender identity?
I think my younger self actually had a really good sense of their like internal identity. And I really wish there was some way that I could protect that for them. And I know I can't because I've seen what has happened to my younger self. But I would just want to give like some encouragement and some validation for this really strong sense of self that my little inner child had a really clear sense of, that then it's like other people put a lot on top of that. And if I had to give advice to someone else who was a young trans person in some way, whether they related to my story and identity or not, I think I would just want them to see that there's so many people who like appreciate what makes them them for whatever that's worth in that moment, to know that the way that they are, just how they are, is something really beautiful and special and valuable. That's a really hard thing to feel for yourself at any age, I think.
What advice do you have for parents who may have children who are questioning their gender identity?
I think really encouraging parents to be gentle with themselves and really explore their own gender and gender identity and how that formed, and like to be gentle and compassionate for how hard it is to be a parent. I feel like too many people take it personally, like they did something wrong somewhere along the line. And other people probably like put that on parents too. I don't think there's one magical thing that you can do to make that experience easier for your kid. Everyone's experience of understanding their gender is going to be different. But I think it really helps to bring in this own like self-exploration and to really think about how gender is constructed and to allow some space where there's less rigidity and more room for like playfulness and exploration.
Is there anything else you would like to say to anyone listening?
To anyone listening who is maybe questioning their own gender, I would want to really encourage people to, I think I've talked a little bit about these ways where I make myself like fit or be palatable for other people. And that's like not something I would ever promote to other people. I really want for myself and for other people to push to like take up more space and be most vibrantly who you are, and to know that It's okay if you can't bring that 100% every day, but I think it has such an impact on the world around you that we just can't even see right now.
They Them Project grows and informs only when it is shared by people like you. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast channels on iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. The best place to view all of the project is theythemproject.org. It is here that you can see all of the photos, videos, and podcast interviews, and easily share the project to help it make a difference.